We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McHale. Hello, Scott.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Colin, as we know, there are about 20 acres available for redevelopment that have been made available by the relocation of Interstate 195. What's the best case scenario for redeveloping this land, and how do we get there?
Well, the best case, I mean, I think clearly we'll see a very diverse mix of uses. One linear mile of property. We have parcels that are several acres located cheek by jowl to Interstate 95 that can support 500,000 or 1 million square feet of office or hotel or multifamily. We have other lots in the bottom of Wickenden Street that are tiny, probably smaller than a Rumford backyard, and you could probably put two townhomes on. So I think as a result of that diversity of property and various neighborhoods in which it's located, we will see very, very different things in every place.
Let's go to Scott.
I'm wondering, I looked down at that area, and one thing we see is the site, the so-called Dynamo Building, the former Narragansett Electric Building that was supposed to be Heritage Harbor Museum, hasn't worked out. What kind of development can we put in there to kind of rescue that building, which right now looks pretty forlorn?
Well, in any type of those large buildings, whether it's a new construction requirement downtown or 111 Westminster, the Superman Building, or Dynamo House, they're all very tenant-driven. So it's very expensive to speculate relative to completing that building and hoping a tenant comes by. So I think for that building, a tenant has to arise to make it work.
We've heard about a few early private sector proposals for the former 195 land. How do you assess these, and what priority, if any, do you think should be given to the earliest proposals?
Well, we haven't made any assessment relative to them. What we've done is had folks come in the order under which they expressed interest to share with us their ideas. We have as a commission an obligation to work with the City of Providence, our neighbors, and the state, including EDC, to come up with a plan relative to where we want to focus, what types of development, how will we assess each application. Is it first come, first serve? Is it how many jobs? In that case, you might say we're going to put a car factory down there. but I don't think that's what we want to do. So we have to come up with some broad but understandable parameters and metrics through which we evaluate each proposal.
What's the timetable for doing that, and how will the commission divide its responsibilities with your new executive director, Jan Brody, who starts work later this month?
Well, I think the seven of us volunteers are looking forward to her taking all the responsibility. But but I know all of my fellow commissioners who are very committed and terrific Rhode Islanders will continue to focus and work very, very hard to manage what we have to manage. But I think Jan is a project manager, a developer, a trained architect of deep experience around the country. So I'm confident we're going to have a work plan that we'll be able to define and share with the public relative to when we will be to the market, when we expect buildings to come out of the ground.
There's been a proposal for some mixed-use development down there by one of our Rhode Island developers, the Carpionato Corporation. What do you think of that plan?
I think any plan is interesting. Anyone, whether they're local or from outside the state, that expresses an interest in investing heavily in the City of Providence and in Rhode Island is more than welcome to share that proposal. We very much look forward to that project being proposed and others when we have established our evaluation criteria. We don't want to just take the first pretty girl that comes along. I think that we want to interview a lot of handsome princes and a lot of beautiful princesses and pick the best one for each location that drives economic vitality, drives a tax base in the City of Providence, and creates a great place to live.
What is the mix, do you think, between nonprofit uses such as universities, which obviously are magnets, sometimes for private sector uses, which generate more of a tax base?
I think we will evaluate any institutional interest, whether it's hospital or university, under the same way we will a private. We will have metrics that we will establish. This is what we want to happen here. And if you satisfy that specific objective, we will let you build here. So I think we should be very fortunate as a city and as a state to understand that we have such strong institutional foundation with Lifespan and Care New England, Rhode Island School of Design, Johnson & Wales, and Brown University clustered in this area. Many other cities around the country would, you know, go begging to have such a strong foundation.
We're talking here with Colin Kane, chairman of the I-195 Redevelopment Commission. Colin, have you, members of the commission, looked at best practices used by other cities, other communities in who have been in similar situations of redeveloping a windfall of new land?
That is on our to-do list. Quite frankly, over the last 18 months, as all volunteers, we pretty much started from scratch as an organization, Ian. So we had to figure out how to function. We had to begin to permit and understand what we were buying. And quite frankly, if you've ever taken a home mortgage out these days, it's pretty complicated. Try doing that with a public bond, which we successfully closed 2 weeks ago.
What would you say the cooperation level's been with Mayor Tavares' administration in Providence and Governor Chafee's at the State House?
Extraordinary on both counts.
No complaints?
None at all. We work hand in glove with the city departments, which includes the engineering department, the planning department. I personally have worked with those departments on the private side and have a very, very high level of respect for their competencies. The governor's office has been extraordinarily supportive in directing his directors and his staff to make it happen for us. How do we run through these bureaucratic barriers to help make decisions and get permits issued?
So you're not worried about getting bogged down in the usual bureaucracy of permitting?
No,
environmental regulations, housing codes, all of the various red tape that so many business people complain about in Rhode Island.
Well, I've been doing that for a long time. In order to get a certificate of occupancy on a building in this particular location, we need 54 permits. And sign off for about 10 or 12 different agencies. That's usually an 18 to 24-month period. Because we've worked so closely with our fellow agencies in the city of Providence, we will have reduced the bulk of that period down to a matter of months. So we've given that a lot of thought to that. And how do we compress that time frame?
Just to follow up on what Scott was asking you about, a lot of times we hear business people complain about what they call excessive regulation in Rhode Island. You're a private developer. Do you agree with that? And if so, what are some prime examples of that?
Well, I can compare it to Boston. We're doing a project in Boston right now. The 54 permits we need in Providence, we need 73 in Boston. I don't think this is necessarily excessive. The regulations are put in place through public processes to protect the health and safety of the community and the water quality of the bay. What is frustrating is I think there oftentimes or occasionally perhaps there's a mentality, the automatic response is to say no, not how do we make it happen. But I think that cultural sea change is underway where we've been very successful with these regulators, our partners in the regulatory agencies, to turn it into a we, not an us versus them.
We see how there is high demand for residential units in downtown Providence. What's your, as a developer, how do you think Providence can build on that and get more residential density downtown?
Well, I'm a profound fan of density and residential uses in our core cities. We need people. We need a 24/7 location. People, there's a tendency nationally toward urban living. And Providence is perfectly suited for that, given its availability of property, its walkability, and all the great things that exist today. I've heard Buff Chase say this, and I agree with it. 1,000 housing units in the next 5 years is a laudable goal. Multifamily rental housing and for sale housing is economic development. Empty office buildings are not economic development.
On that note, how much is the glut of office space in downtown Providence? We see this. It's getting even worse now that the so-called Industrial Trust or the Superman building is now vacant. How much is that going to impede your attempts to bring in new office space down in this knowledge or jewelry district, whatever you like to dub it?
We have so many urban myths that run around Rhode Island, and one of them is this glut of empty office space in downtown Providence. It's simply not the case. We do have some very large blocks of vacant space, including 111 Westminster, the Superman building. But that's a B-minus product. That is not what most office users want to occupy today, and it has no parking associated with it. So if you take some of the large, almost obsolete facilities out of our count, our vacancy for office is quite low in the city of Providence.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you, Ian and Colin.
And the chairman of the I-195 Redevelopment Commission, Colin Kane.
Thank you so much for having me, gentlemen.